Okay, so for many of you, this is going to be the last Dharma talk. There will be a sutta class this afternoon from 3 to 4, but as soon as that finishes, sorry? Yeah, I am, but I'm going at 4 o'clock. So 3 to 4 will be available, and then after that, I go off to a little ceremony. Well, so 3 to 4, we have the last sutta class, finish off the Eightfold Path, so that you can all go back enlightened. And for the interviews this afternoon, we won't have time to do that. And I'll be back this evening. There will be a Q&A session this evening, and that'll be completed by the loving kindness meditation. So it'll be a shortened Q&A, so please don't ask too many Q&A questions for this evening. But start off with a nice little story, one of my favourite stories, about it does not matter how much you think you've attained or not attained on this retreat. It doesn't really matter too much, because all that thing about attainments and trying to get something is always looking in the wrong place. Which is why I tell one of my favourite stories. And again, if you've heard it before, it's your fault, because you listen to too many of my talks. I can't escape it. Everything which I teach is on these machines. So even the Buddha repeated himself many times. But that's the story of the old monk. So a long time ago, in the days when monks would wander from place to place, living very simply. And there was one monk who was a very old monk, but a very good monk, had hardly any possessions, and would wander from place to place, sleeping under the trees or in little shacks, wherever. He had no attachments to anything. But one morning he came for alms food to the hut of a very poor farmer. And the poor farmer was very delighted to have the opportunity to give some food to this very impressive monk. And having given some food to this monk, he asked the monk, "It's soon to be the rains retreat, the time when monks have to stay put in one place, just like we're having our ceremony to enter the rains retreat next Sunday. Week tomorrow." And the farmer said, "Venerable sir, have you got a place yet to spend your rains retreat period?" And the old monk said, "Actually, not yet." "Oh, venerable sir," said the farmer, "please, out of compassion, come and stay with us. Not far from here is this lovely meadow by the river, which I own, and I can build a simple hut for you. It doesn't take much to look after a monk." And in fact, at this point I usually add the story, when the first monks from our tradition went to the West, they went to UK, and the people who were going to look after them started to be concerned. Can they afford to look after a monk? And so one of the trustees, a man called Colin Sharp, he was also a member, I think I got his name wrong, Colin Ash. He was a professor of economics at Reading University, an advisor to the Bank of England. So he was a top economist and a good Buddhist, and he decided, as they say, to crunch the numbers to find out how much it would cost to look after a monk. And he came out with the answer that it is cheaper to look after a monk than it is to look after a dog. And it was true. You have a pet dog, it costs a lot of money.
Yeah.
Monks are cheaper. And there's many similarities. Dogs live in little houses in the back called kennels. Monks live in cooties. A tiny bit bigger, because we are a bit bigger. Dogs eat out of bowls, so do monks. You saw that yesterday. And dogs will never bite you, or if it's a good dog, or bark at you, just like monks. Whenever they see you, if I had a tail, I'd be wagging it. And all you need to do is pat me on the head every now and again, and I'm a happy dog. There's many similarities, and they're much cheaper to look after a monk than look after a dog. So once he worked that one out, he told everybody that every home should have one. A monk. He just put him in a little house in the backyard, and whenever he needs any advice, you know, you just go to them, and they're always kind, they wag their tail, they lick you metaphorically, and you just take them for a walk in the morning, and that's it. Much cheaper. So anyway, it doesn't cost much to look after a good monk. So there, this poor farmer said, "I'll look after you." And the monk said, "Okay, very good." So the poor farmer put a very simple hut by the river, and the monk meditated there for 3 months with comfort arms round. Any time the farmer needed some advice, you know, get some advice from the monk. And the wife would too, and even the little children, he would tell them some nice stories to make sure they were good children afterwards. And even they had a little dog there as well, and even the dog liked her when the monk visited him, because he had such a beautiful, kind character. So for 3 months, this very wise, kind old monk was their teacher, and all they did was feed him once a day. They got to love that monk, so at the end of the rain retreat, when the monk came to the poor farmer's hut and announced, "Tomorrow I will have to leave. I will have to go." Even though the farmer knew that one day the monk has to go, the farmer was heartbroken. He started to cry and said, "Please, venerable sir, we love you so much, please stay." And even the wife burst out in tears, as did the children. And even the poor old dog put his tail between his legs and started whining like dogs do. They all fell in love with this old monk, and now he was going. But the old monk said, "Out of compassion for you, because you've been so good to me, I want to make sure you don't have to live in such poverty ever again. Because my meditation has been very deep. And I have found that very close by, closer than you think, there's a buried treasure. And I want you to have that." "But," said the monk, "you have to listen carefully and follow my instructions precisely." So even though they were sad, the monk was going to leave, they were also excited that tomorrow they'll be rich, because they knew old monks don't lie. So, even though they were sad, they had to have the instructions. The instructions were, the following morning, you have to stand in the entranceway to your house, the doorway, and wait for the sun to rise above the horizon. When the sun starts to rise above the horizon, take up your bow and arrow and point it in the direction of the rising sun. And when the sun rises above the horizon, let the arrow fly. And where the arrow falls, there you will find the treasure." And the old monk left. And the following morning, like people do when they're very greedy, he was up about 2 hours before dawn, waiting, when's that sun going to rise? But finally, it started to rise above the horizon. So he stood in the doorway to his simple hut. As it rose more, he picked up his bow and arrow, as it rose more, he pointed the bow and arrow in the direction of the rising sun. And as the sun rose completely above the horizon, he shot the arrow, and it went a long way. And he ran after it, so did his wife, and his two children, and also the dog. The dog's a very important part of the story, remember the dog. And where the arrow landed, this was a long time ago, in Asia. So guess who had to dig the hole? The wife. If you make your wife do the dirty work, that's bad karma. You're going to get result pretty soon. So the wife was digging the hole. She dug and dug and dug where the arrow fell. And what did she find?
Nothing.
Only trouble. Because that arrow landed in a field belonging to a lawyer. And the lawyer bound them and said, "You can't destroy other people's property. I am going to sue you. I am going to take all your property away. You can't do that." And the poor wife said, "It's not my fault. My husband told me to do it." And the husband said, "It's not my fault. The old monk told me to dig." And at that, the lawyer said, "Did you say old monk?" "Yes." Because the lawyer said, "I'm a Buddhist too. And I know that old monks don't lie." "What did he say?" And when they related the instructions, the lawyer thought and said, "Oh, I know why. You're not educated enough to actually shoot an arrow. Tomorrow morning," he said, "I will shoot that arrow. And we will do a deal. 51% to me, 49% to you." And they signed a contract, which is what lawyers do. And having signed the contract, the poor farmer had no choice. The following morning, the lawyer was there waiting. And at dawn, he picked up the bow and arrow, stood at the doorway of the house. And as the sun rose, the disc of the sun just separated from the horizon, he pointed the bow and arrow in the direction of that sun. And he shot the arrow, went much further. And they all ran after it, the lawyer, the farmer, his wife, the two children and the dog. And where it fell, this time it was the husband's job to dig the hole. Whatever you ask your wife to do today, you will have to do tomorrow. Remember that. So they dug a big hole. What did they find? Nothing, only more trouble. Because this time the arrow landed in a field belonging to a general in the army. And a general just happened to be coming past with his soldiers. And he saw these people destroying his property and said, "You can't do that." And they told the soldiers, "Cut their heads off, now." And at that, the husband says, "It's not my fault. The lawyer, he told me to dig here." And the lawyer said, "It's not my fault. An old monk said we'd find a treasure here." And at that, the general said, "Put your swords down." Because even the general was a Buddhist as well. And he said, "Old monks don't lie. What did he tell you?" And when he heard what the old monk had said, the general said, "I know your problem. What does a lawyer or a farmer know about shooting a bow and arrow? That's a military job. You have to be trained like me in archery. I will do a deal with you. Tomorrow I will shoot the arrow and we'll split it three ways." No need for contracts. And so the following morning the general was there. And the general stood at the doorway to the house, waited for the sun to rise, pointed the bow and arrow in the direction of the rising sun, and he shot that arrow. And it went so far, because he was an expert, trained all his life in archery, as soldiers in that time had to do. And they all ran after it, the general and the lawyer and the farmer and his wife and the two children and the dog, yes. And where it landed this time, it was a lawyer's job to dig the hole. He dug and he dug and he dug. And what did he think? You think he found?
Nothing.
Nothing, only more trouble. Because this time, it landed in a field belonging to the king. And the king had everyone arrested, including the general, and had to appear in court before the king. And he said, "General, I'm surprised that you of all people have done this, to destroy royal property is a capital offence. I have to execute you, and the lawyer, and the farmer, and your wife, and the two children, and even the poor little dog." And at that the general said, "Sire, it's not my fault." The lawyer said, "We find a treasure here." And the lawyer said, "I heard that from the farmer." And the farmer said, "I heard that from this old monk, of which His Majesty the King stopped." "Did you say old monk?" "Yeah." And the king said, "That's strange, because old monks don't lie. What did he tell you?" And they gave the instructions to His Majesty the King. "I can't see any mistake which you made." But he said, "This is so interesting, I'm going to suspend your sentence until I find that monk and get to the bottom of this." So he put all the people, including the general, the lawyer, the farmer, his wife and the children, even the dog, into jail for a few days. He looked after them. But in the meantime, he sent his soldiers to find that old monk. And soon they found him, and they brought him back to the palace, and everyone had to appear before the king. And the king said, "Old monk, I'm surprised at you. You're supposed to be wise and compassionate, but you've got these people into big trouble. Why?" And the old monk said, "Because they didn't follow my instructions. Just after all these days, if you haven't got jhana enlightened yet, it's not my fault. It's because you didn't follow my instructions." Because I'm an old monk. I don't mind. So the king said, well, where did they make a mistake? I don't understand." And the old monk said, "Your Majesty, I invite you to go to that poor person's house the following morning. I invite you to shoot that, to follow instructions, shoot the bow and arrow. I invite you to follow my instructions, and I guarantee, Your Majesty, tomorrow we will find that treasure. But I ask you one thing. Will you divide that treasure up equally between the four parties? Between yourself, the general, the lawyer, and the farmer? Because even the quarter share of that treasure will make you so happy. And how much richer would it make that poor farmer who has nothing?" So the king agreed. And the following morning, the king, together with the general, together with the lawyer, the farmer, his wife, the two children, and the dog, yeah, they were there. And the monk was also there. And as the dawn began to break, His Majesty moved towards the doorway of the simple farmer's hut. And he turned around to the monk, and the monk said, "Correct, Your Majesty." And then he picked up the bow and arrow. "Correct, Your Majesty." He pointed it at the disk of the rising sun. And he turned around. "Correct, Your Majesty," said the monk. And it was just as the disk of the sun was about to separate from the horizon. He was just about to shoot the arrow. And the old monk said, "Wrong, Your Majesty. I never said, shoot the arrow. I said, let it fly. Let it fly." And the king was very smart. He thought for a few seconds. He was holding the arrow between his thumb and forefinger. And he understood. He let the arrow fly. And it fell right down between his feet, right where he was standing. And there they dug a tiny hole, and what do you think they found? A huge treasure. And the old man said, "It's not the treasure of wealth which you find when you let go of the arrow of wanting, of desire. When you let it fly, where does it fall? Right where you are, right here, right now. Right where you're standing. Or in your case, sitting." And there they found this huge treasure. And the old man said, "It's not just money you find when you let go of the arrow of craving, of wanting. You let it go and you find right where you are, right here, right now, is a wonderful treasure of peace, contentment, happiness, enlightenment." What do people do? They shoot the arrow over there. They shoot the arrow over there. They shoot it somewhere else. They want to get the perfect marriage. They want to get the good job. They want to get enough money to retire. They want to get fame. They want to get fortune. And what happens when you shoot the arrow like that? What do you get? Nothing, only trouble. So, that is a wonderful story about the Dhamma. And that's so true, and you all know why that's true. Because I already told you, I'm an old monk. I told you it, and old monks, they don't lie. So, that's the nice story about what you learn here. Maybe you don't get jhanas now, maybe you don't get enlightened because you're shooting the arrow. So let the arrow fly. It always goes right where you are. So these are teachings which put these, what you hear in the sutras in the afternoon, just in something you can understand easily. It's not that you don't do anything, because people keep arguing with me, "Well, if we let go, we don't do anything, that means you have to stay here in jhana grove for the rest of your life." That's not a bad idea, is it? But no, this is the time when we let go, this is the time for doing stuff. But the point is, if you really want to find treasure, then let go. Just be here. Stop aiming your mind out there, over there, trying to get something. Because if you do, that's why we get just trouble. So over here, when you are this final day for most of you, don't send your mind back home. Don't send your mind back to Hong Kong and Indonesia. Just take every moment you can and enjoy it here. Just squeeze every last moment until, I'm not sure when each of you are leaving, all different times, but don't pack your bags until the very last minute. Maybe half an hour, because who knows? There may be an accident at the airport and it's closed down. Maybe there is a strike and you can't fly back. Who knows what might happen in the future? So, enjoy it as much as you can. And don't go back to Indonesia before your plane leaves. That's what happens. People are just always so far in the future. They're destroying the present moment. So enjoy the place while you're here. And that tells you just a lot about how we've been teaching here. When we want something more, we can't enjoy what we already have. And just learning that ability to be at peace and let go, to be here, is such an important part of happiness. You don't need much to be happy. You see, in just my cave, you don't need much to be happy. You see, even my robe, which is torn, but it keeps me warm. You don't need much to be happy. So, this is learning a very powerful secret. If you're working, fine. But remember, the secret of happiness is contentment. We all have enough, but sometimes we're too busy trying to get more, we forget what we already have. So this is an important thing you're learning here. Even if you don't get fully enlightened, coming to a retreat like this, you learn so much and you get so much as you go home. And you can't really put it into words what you get here. But the other story which I love telling at the end of a retreat is a story, because I like telling stories. People remember them. When I teach the Dhamma, they remember the stories and the jokes. The Dhamma... not much. But the story, that story of the old man... So no, that story of the old monks don't lie, that's an important story. It brings it home to you. Why? You know, we don't get any peace. So we're shooting the arrow in the wrong place. Now this story is why you come on retreats here. The purpose of this. Because in the olden days, when you will have to go back to Indonesia, to Jakarta, or to Hong Kong, you would have to go in a boat. Can you all hear me in the back? No?
Can you hear me now?
Okay, come a bit closer. The rain is coming. It's the time the monks went on range retreats. Very good. So in the olden days, when you had to go from place to place, you would not go in an aircraft. They didn't have aircraft. You would go in passenger boats. And many of you may have seen pictures of things like Titanic. That's how people would travel in those days, in big passenger liners. So there was this gentleman, and he was from Jakarta, and he was going to Hong Kong to teach at Hong Kong University. And this Indonesian professor was really smart. And so he embarked on a boat in... was it Plui? That's where the harbour is, the docks. Yeah. Okay. I think I'm right. And anyway, he got on the boat to travel to Hong Kong. It was many days, and the first night at sea, after his dinner, he went for a walk on the deck, a bit of exercise, and there on the deck, he saw this old sailor, and he decided to have a conversation with this old man. And he said, "Old man, how long have you been a sailor?" He said, "Ever since I was young, maybe 12 or 13 years of age. I was apprenticed, and I've been sailing these oceans all over the world the whole of my life, which is many, many years." "Amazing," said the professor. And the professor said, "Look at those waves in the ocean underneath. You've been sailing this ocean all your life. You must have seen a lot of interesting animals. You must be an expert on marine science, which is one of my hobbies." And the old man said, "I know nothing about marine science. All I know is underneath me some fish, that's all." "Is that all you know, just fish? You haven't learned about the different types of fish, where they live and how they migrate?" "Nope," said the old man. And the professor, being an intellectual, said, "You stupid old man. What a waste of a life. You've been sailing the oceans all your life and you never bothered to learn about the world around you and underneath you. You stupid old man." And the professor walked away. On the second night on the ocean, it was such a nice dinner. And it was a clear sky. Remember a few days ago when you went out to watch the stars and how wonderful it was? So the professor went out onto deck, and it was a clear night. You could see the whole universe, it seemed, in the stars above. And there was the old man, the old sailor again, looking up at the stars as well. So the professor went beside him and said, "Old man, have you been living so long just in these oceans? You must know so much about astronomy, because those stars tell you your position." These are the days before GPS or GPW. GPS is Global Positioning Satellite. GPW is Global Positioning Wife. I've been in your class. This way, darling. No, that way. So, they had to depend upon the stars. So you must know a lot about astronomy, which is one of my other hobbies. And the old man said, "I know nothing about the stars. Only they're just little pimples of light in the sky. That's all I know." "What, you stupid old man. All those years at sea, you've never learned about the heavens above you. You never opened up a book and learned about something about astronomy." "No," said the old man. "You stupid old man," said the professor. "You stupid old man. What a waste of a life. What a waste of a life. All those years at sea, never learned about the heavens above you." And the professor stormed off. That's the third night at sea. It was such a beautiful, delicious lunch by the chef. And when you have a good meal, you're always in a good mood. So when he went up on the deck for the third night, he saw the old sailor there. And there was such a beautiful, warm, fragrant breeze just wafting over the ocean. And it was such an incredibly beautiful night. The professor decided to give the old sailor one more chance. He went beside him and said, "Okay, just knowing the animals in the waves and the oceans underneath you, that's maybe not so important. Even knowing the stars and astronomy, you know, there's other people on the ship who can know about that. But the weather, that is so important if you're at sea in a boat. The weather which drives the sails and gets you to your destination, but it can also sink your boat if it's bad weather." And the professor said, "Actually, I am a professor of meteorology. And I am going to Hong Kong University to give lectures on weather systems. So maybe I can get some information from you. All those years at sea, you must have learned so much about the weather." And the old sailor said, "Nope, I know nothing about the weather. Nothing at all." "You stupid old man. You dummy of a sailor. You imbecilic nincompoop." It's another of my favourite words, nincompoop. I don't know where it comes from. It's a nice word. "What a waste of a life. All those years at sea, you never bothered to learn about even the weather around you. What a waste of a life. What a waste of a life." And the professor resolved never to talk to that stupid old sailor again. But the fourth night at sea, the professor never had any dinner, because it was a very rough night at sea. The wind was strong and the rain was beating down. That's my sound effects. The ship was rolling back and forth more and more. And the old professor suffered from seasickness. So he decided it's better not to have dinner that evening, otherwise it would just come out again. So he stayed in his cabin all night. And as it got later and later into the night, the ship moved more and more, rolling as the waves got more violent, as the wind howled ever louder, as the ship kept rocking more and more, until bang! There was this huge crash! And everything went silent for a moment. The professor was so terrified that he went to the door to find out what was going on. And right outside the door, who was running outside his door?
they all say yes. And they all say that Scott and turned to the terrified professor and said, "Professor, in all your life, have ever you learned anything about swimming?" "No," said the professor. "You stupid old professor, what a waste of life, the ship is sinking." And the moral of that story is, if you're sailing in a ship, yeah, it's interesting to know about marine science or astronomy or meteorology, but the most important thing you should learn if you're on a ship is how to swim. And the moral of that story is, in life, you may be a lawyer, an educator, a doctor, or whatever it is, a business person, whatever you do in your career, but the most important thing to learn is how to swim. How to keep your head above water and not drown when things go wrong in life. When you have a tragedy in the family, somebody dies. Or you lose your job. Or someone cheats you. Or, you know, you get diagnosed with cancer. When those things happen to you in your life, can you swim? If you can't, what a waste of a life, you stupid old Buddhist. So that's what we're learning here. Even if it's not maybe jhanas or enlightenment, but you're learning how to swim, little by little. How to be able to let things go. This too will pass. It doesn't last. Look at this retreat. It's only yesterday you came here, and tomorrow it's all over again. Finish. Gone. And you have to wait till this year. That's actually, I'm very pleased that we took the photographs yesterday, where people are still happy. If you take the photographs at the end of the retreat, people will cry. So it is really good retreat if you're enjoying it and it's about to go. But it finishes and before you know it, you're back again. Another retreat, another time. So these things, they come and go. Reincarnation. One thing finishes, another thing starts. There's a story about how the world lives, how it lasts. So this is where we learn just how to swim in life. But it's not just even learning how to swim in life. It answers so many of the deep questions about life, about why some people are just unhappy, even if they're so wealthy. They want more, and they just don't know how to enjoy their life. And sometimes the people who are poor but have beautiful family life, they understand, you know, what is really important in life. It is just the friendship, the ability to forgive, to let go. Just a story comes to mind, just of when I was giving a talk somewhere over in Queensland, and on the way back, before I went to the airport, a Sri Lankan man invited me to have a lunch in his house. It was arranged by one of my common friends. And when I went to his house for the lunch, Dana, the offering of the food, I asked him and said, "Oh, you know, how is he?" And his son was there and he said, "Have you only got one son?" He said, "No, I've got two sons." I said, "Where's the other son?" And that's when he told me he hadn't seen his eldest son nor spoken to him for 7 years. "So what happened?" He said, "Well, we had a falling out," and hadn't seen his son for 7 years. And his younger son was there, just listening to us talk. And I asked the youngest son, I said, "Have you got your brother's telephone number?" He said, "Yes." I said, "I order you to call your elder brother." So because I'm a very well-known senior monk, sometimes people are scared of me. They better do what I say or they think it's going to be bad luck. Of course, that's untrue, but I don't care about that. I'll use whatever I can to solve problems, even superstition. Just like that time when I was visiting my mother and she was making my lunch. And so,
when the doorbell of her apartment rang, I said, "I'll answer it, Mum, because otherwise my lunch will be spoiled. And that's important for me, only once a day, so you better make it right." So I answered the door, and as I answered the door, there was this elderly lady. She announced she was what in London they call gypsy. And she was selling things door to door. And she said, "Do you like to buy a sprig of lucky heather from a gypsy?" I was very polite, and I said, "No, thank you, madam." And I was about to go, and she said, "If you don't buy this sprig of lucky heather, I will put a gypsy curse on you." That was a sales pitch, a marketing technique. And of course, I already mentioned, if people are cheeky to me, they get it back 3 or 4 times over. So I stood up and I said, "Can you not see my monk's robe? I am a Buddhist monk, and my curses are much more powerful than yours." And I must feel I've got a mixture of guilt. I shouldn't have done that, but also just such pleasure. I must admit, I was a bit mean, but you should see her reaction. Her jaw dropped, her face went white, she turned around and she ran as fast as she could. She was terrified. We don't have Buddhist curses, and if I did, I wouldn't sort of do them on anybody. But she didn't know that. So that's just the same as the sign on the front of this Jhana Grove. Have you seen that sign? "Trespassers will be converted." We don't convert anybody, but people don't know that. You say trespassers will be prosecuted, and that doesn't stop people. Say trespassers will be converted, that stops them. But anyway, we'll do that anyway. But just anyway, so where was I with this? What was I talking about?
Eldest son.
Yeah, I just go from one story to another story. I've got to find my way back again. So he was so scared that, you know, he had to follow my orders. He rang his older brother and I said, "Give me your phone." And I talked to the older brother and said, "This is Ajahn Brahm. You know who I am?" "Oh, yeah, Ajahn Brahm. Yeah, I know you." He said, "You better come to your father's house now." And I hung up the phone. I pressed the stop. He had no choice. So he came. He came to the house in about 50 minutes. First time his father had seen him, he'd seen his father for 7 years. And I sat them down in front. They wouldn't look at each other. And then I asked the father, I said, "Why is this the first time in 7 years you've seen your son? What happened 7 years ago?" And this is absolutely true. He said, "I can't remember." And I just said, well, do you remember? Why is he? You haven't seen your son? "I don't know either." Isn't that so true? All these things which happened years ago, which split people up. You know, sometimes we don't really remember what the big problem was. So anyway, I said, "Okay, turn to each other and just, you know, it's your dad, it's your son, so make up." So they did. They asked forgiveness from each other, and so they're a family again. And so he's so thankful now. When you go over to Bodhinyana, those metal tables there, he gave those to the monastery. He wanted to give something to the monastery. So those little metal tables there, that was a father's donation to our monastery, just saying thank you for being his son together, son and family together. So you can do that through this teaching. So you can forgive. For example, many times, you know, people say, "How many times should you forgive somebody? You know, your husband has been unfaithful to you again. Your wife has spent too much on the credit card." I know that's stereotyping, but that's just an example. And so, how many times should you forgive? And my answer is, always one more time. And it's a beautiful thing, always one more time. Forgiveness is so beautiful, it's part of our Buddhist path. If your wife has done something wrong, your husband has done something wrong, karma will sort it out. They can't escape from stuff. This beautiful law of karma means if you seek for punishment or retribution, that's karma's job. Your job is to forgive and be kind. That's what the Buddha always would do. And if you can do that, it's such a beautiful world which we make, when people are kind to one another and can forgive the past. Otherwise called letting go. And that's what you've been training in your meditation. I told you, let go of the past. Be kind to the past. Just be a defense lawyer, not a prosecutor from the past. A prosecutor sees all the reasons why that person misbehaved and why they deserve to be punished. That's why you justify getting angry at them. But a defense lawyer tries to find any loophole, any extenuating circumstances, any reason to forgive them. So be a defense lawyer, not a prosecutor, and find any reason whatsoever to forgive somebody. Just like that story I said, they may have hit their head that day, their brain damaged, temporarily. That's why they've been angry at you. Or they've been caught. Or, no, just give them a benefit of the doubt. Maybe it's working out my karma from the past. I cheated them, now they have to cheat me. Whatever it is, give them the benefit of the doubt. Karma will do the punishment. Your job is to do the forgiveness. And the same with the future. We just don't worry about sort of what's happening in the future. We make the future now. And so if you can learn how to be peaceful and kind and forgiving now, you have a much better future. And, you know, if you're going to live a long time healthy, don't worry about the future. Who knows what's going to happen? I never worry about what I'm going to talk about. You know, even last night, those of you who heard me just telling jokes most of the night, you know, I don't know how much Dhamma was there, but maybe just not sort of, it didn't mention dependent origination or Four Noble Truths or Eightfold Path, but people had fun there. They enjoyed coming. And underneath all of those funny stories, it was a very powerful message. Learning how to let go and just to be and not worry about anything. So that's what you're learning here. And even if you think, oh, when I go back I won't remember very much, or you have to take notes, don't worry about taking notes or trying to remember stuff. Because it's something which I learned at university, and something which I always practice when I do teachings, and that is what we call brainwashing. For the last 8 days, I've been brainwashing you so much that you don't really notice what's going on. So, you have been trained, and sometimes you, not by the theories, but just by kindness and getting into your head. And a lot of this stuff you remember. Not in words, but just where they come from and what's behind them. Just the kindness, the forgiveness, the fun, the not criticizing each other. Look, there's so much I could have criticized you for over the last 8 days. You all know all the noodles, the talking, all the messing around. But you say, I don't. And that's important teaching. Say about forgiveness. If I can't forgive you, if I can't care for you, if I can't trust you, then I'm not teaching by example. This is how the path works. Kindness, forgiveness, letting go. This compassion. That's probably what you've learned here more than any meditation. And that will actually create good meditation in the future for you. That's how the path works. Shoot the arrow, you find only trouble and suffering. Let the arrow fly right where you are, who you are right now. There you find peace and happiness and joy. That's how it works. Now, before we do any sadhus, there's a little 10-minute meditation before we finish this session. So just sitting down, closing your eyes, just being here, and let the hour fly. Don't shoot it, don't control it, just let it go, and it will fall right where you are, where you're sitting, in this moment, at this time, in this body, in this place. You're here. You don't need to dig very deep to find an amazing treasure, a quarter of which would make a king so happy. So imagine how much it is for you. Just being here. Learning how to let go of the past by kindness to the past, forgiveness. Learning how not to worry about the future, because now is where the future is being made. You're learning how to swim like the old sailor could, but the professor never learned. Learning how to be and enjoy this moment with the sound of the rain on the roof. Not trying to achieve things or get things. Just being here, enjoying this moment. I'm going to be quiet until we finish the meditation in 10 minutes time. Have a wonderful morning. I'll be available for interviews for the next hour.